Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I give a shit. There's so much to give a shit about now. Isn't it crazy out there? I love the Omarosa plot line. That's my favorite now because it's just really silly and I can like totally laugh at it. Don't you find, I mean, it's just, and it's pure entertainment. That's all I can say. It's fun watching Trump get screwed by one of his own people. So I'm in a good mood today. Anyway, you know what? I got to get this out here right now before I forget, because Tom will be so mad at me. But do you know what? We are trying to get into South by Southwest, which would be so great for us. And we're not even asking you for money. We're just asking you to vote. Come on. Don't you want to get Brooklyn out there? We do so much great programming here and stuff. And this is literally one of the most inclusive organizations I have ever even I've been part of or even been aware of. And that's the truth. So why don't you go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/SXSW and just vote for us. It won't even cost you anything. And I've done a lot for you, okay? I have done so much on this social media crap, liking your shit and reposting it and all that. And so does everybody else here. And you could help us out. All right. Did I guilt you into that? I'm starting to channel my Jewish mother, which is very upsetting to me. Anyway, I just want you to know. So I have this amazing guest here right in front of me, Heather Fink. Say hi, Heather.
Hi, Heather. Classic.
And Heather. Well, okay. So Heather moved to LA a year ago, right, Heather?
That's exactly right. September last year.
And Heather has been an incredibly well-respected part of the New York, Brooklyn comedy scene. Mostly, we haven't really hung together, right? But I'm really aware of her work. And I remember when you directed Sarah Benincasa's focus group thing. I think that was like a really big deal. I love that. That was hilarious and all this other stuff. So anyway, I found out that Heather was coming back to New York for a short time. So she's here with me today. And we were just going over what we were going to discuss. And there's so much to discuss. But this is what I think we're sort of going to settle on, which is the fact that, first of all, we have to talk about Heather's movie. Okay. I have to get organized here. I was out last week. Did you know that I was in Asbury Park with my husband doing nothing except, I shouldn't say this, we ate a lot of pot cookies and sat on the beach. But I mean, it's a vacation. Okay. I feel a little guilty about it, but you know, it was a vacation. It's not my real life. So anyway, she did this. So, okay, Heather Fink. There she is, the lovely, gorgeous Heather Fink. She went to NYU grad school film program, and she was a comedian. She's doing a lot less performing now. She's actually in a union and does sound and has made good money at that, right, Heather?
That's correct.
And she's done like directed. She's a writer, director. And she's done all sorts of shorts for Comedy Central and stuff like that. The biggest project, and this is so impressive, and if you do look her up and find out anything about her, she was the writer-director of a feature film called Inside You. And I can see her face like, was that the biggest experience you've had career-wise, Heather?
Absolutely. I mean, a feature film is such a beast, you know? It was the most intense creative or career experience of my entire life. I've directed other projects since, a few shorts, including Sarah Benincasa's short was the first thing I directed after the movie. And I've directed a TV pilot that was, you know, something written by SJ and Ginny, which are a great comedy duo.
She's like in her 30s too, folks. She's just in her 30s. Yeah, go ahead.
And then most recently, I've started directing shorts for College Humor. Mm-hmm. And I have a few new features and a TV pilot I've written that I want to get made. And I'm working on that right now.
She's so fucking driven. That's what, that's what, you know, that's what I'm talking about. So anyway, the topic of Heather's film is sort of what I'm interested in sort of exploring in a theme that I think the film has a theme that I think sort of resonates throughout her life and her other writing and her other work. And that's a theme I want to find out more about where it comes from. But why don't you explain the plot of the movie, Heather?
Sure. So Inside You, which you can watch on iTunes.
And you star in it. By the way, oh, folks, yeah? she didn't start out starting to star in it, but I think, aren't you glad you did? I mean, I know you didn't.
No.
Because I was watching you, and I thought that you really embodied the character better than probably an actor, you know, well, whatever. Go ahead.
Thank
tell us
you.
About
I'm
what
not,
the film's about.
Well, I would say on that topic, I'm not unhappy with my performance, but I don't want to act and direct at the same time. I had lost an actor last minute, and it was really hard casting that part. So I was just like, was very utilitarian about providing the role and the performance that the movie needed. Right. So it's just laser focused like that. I was just like, well, this is what the character needs to be. I'll just be it.
Mm-hmm.
The movie Inside You, which is available on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, mm-hmm. Google Play, and Xbox.
And there's a link on my Facebook page.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Inside You. It's a comedy about a couple that switches bodies after a magic night with a sex toy.
But what
happens...
Or it's
a magic sex toy. Yeah.
Tell us about like what happens that like you become each other's mm-hmm. you take over each other's bodies.
Yeah, so it's really an exploration of gender, what it's like to be a woman for a day, what it's like to be a guy for a day, and actually the underlying theme of the movie was an exploration of my fears about marriage. That's what it was really about.
Ah.
And as much as I like to talk about gender and I wanted to portray what is the female experience, what is the male experience. There's only so many things. A movie can only explore things that can be seen and heard. And there's so much that's internal and that felt more dramatic and less comedic. It was ultimately a comedy. So I didn't go everywhere, but I went some places.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can tell just from watching the, what do they call it? The
trailer.
I think pilot trailer. I mean, you guys did like an amazing job of like, a guy, you know, you're the male lead gets his period. What does he say? It's so funny. It's like,
oh, well, he doesn't want at the end, very
like
end
I'm
of,
perioding really hard.
Oh, there's a character who's asking why they're being so weird and they don't know. So the guy's trying to be a girl and it says, why are you being so weird? And so he says, oh, I'm perioding really hard.
Right. And then like the guy, the female in the guy's body is mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I got a hard on.
Yeah, and is excited. Like, well, the general thing stuff. Is that the male character is terrified of being a woman, is very scared of it, and the female character is so psyched to be a man. And I feel that speaks to a truth in our culture where, you know, throwing like a girl is a terror. It's scary to be a girl, you know, and it's exciting to be a guy. So that was their perspective, each character's perspective throughout the movie.
And it's really like it's so funny. It like really it's just what you it just really made me imagine what it was like. It was really funny. But so I wanted to ask you about we were going to talk about what I have so many thoughts in my head. I'm sorry. I am like, so I was going to ask you, but I also want, oh my God.
Wait, can I just, while you're finding your words, just tell you thank you for all the kind things you're saying and for having me. Thank you.
I told you I took a week off and I ate a lot of pot cookies. That's the problem. So I wanted to ask you about your background and how that, plays into this, but I was also going to try something new, which is starting off by asking you to tell us a childhood trauma story. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a new feature on my show, so I thought we'd start with Heather. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you said childhood trauma, my mind was like, oh, family stuff. But I realized the single most traumatic incident was actually a school thing. And when I was young, I was very mischievous. I was a class clown, and that's a huge part of who I am. And for women, that's unacceptable. For men, they're celebrated. A lot of my strengths and greatest qualities are things that are celebrated in men, but they are punished in women. Mm-hmm. And so in fifth grade, I was in this, they had a thing called Gifted and Talented program. I was in New Jersey public schools. It was around the year 1990, I guess. And the Gifted and Talented program, you had to like interview, and it's for like special kids, but like, or creative.
And you're
or,
special and creative. Well, it's just same.
So I was in that, but I guess I was the only troublemaker in that. And I was kind of like hyper and everything. And I one day came to school and everyone was there early, and in the fifth grade classroom, and this is public school, there was a circle of chairs in the room, and all the students, all my classmates were sitting there, and the teacher, and there was a chair in the middle, and they said, and she said, I have to sit in the chair, and the topic of today's class is why is Heather so bad, and what are we going to do about it? And
wow.
That really happened to me.
That sounds like child abuse.
And the charges were these offenses. One was that my dad had a copy machine in his home office. And remember troll dolls?
Sure.
So I would photocopy them. And I made a fake magazine, obviously, called Play Troll Magazine. Mm-hmm. And I drew like sexy lingerie on the trolls and made it like a sexy troll.
And how old were you?
I was in fifth grade, whatever age that is. I was proud of it. Like, I would make things I thought were funny and I would distribute these things. And I know that was one of the offenses. And the other offense was I was taking balloons and filling it with sand and selling them as like, stress balls didn't exist yet, okay?
Yeah, right.
I was selling them as like these squishy balls that you could buy. And they were popping in the school, and then there'd be like sand in the hallways.
Okay.
Which wasn't like the point, but I was trying to be a little entrepreneur. And then I would buy, remember Warheads candies?
No, I'm too old.
Okay, well, they were this hot candy at that age, and they were like either super sour or super hot, and I bought them at 5 cents a piece and sold them for 25 cents a piece, which is also against the rules, and I think you should reward this, but no, I was punished, they were talking about how bad I am, and everyone had to share why I was bad.
That's so awful.
That's awful.
Don't you think? Did your parents?
Yeah.
What did your parents say about that? That seems horrible. How was that treated?
They were really mad. Actually, my parents were really great about. I had a lot of teachers punish me, and they tended to take my side a lot, which is special. My dad was very especially encouraging because he always had an attitude of sticking it to the man and not trusting the man and not trusting teachers always. I had teachers I loved and got along with really well. And then teachers who just thought I was no good trouble and not acting how a woman should act.
Did you get good grades?
I did, in the classes I liked, actually. I was like, If I didn't like the teacher, or I mean, there's things that I've learned as an adult. I feel my parents raised me with manners and things, but there's teachers I didn't respect when I was younger because
they don't deserve it. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I had my reasons. Looking back on it, I think I did behave inappropriately. Here, one example is I was in this English class, and there's this teacher who has since, decades later, been found. We found out that he got a hand job from one of the students and other weird stories like that.
That is really weird.
You know, and as a kid, you like hear these rumors and you're like, oh my God. And as an adult, you're like, that's so wrong. But that teacher wanted to be cool with the cool high school students. This is in high school. And he sat at the chair in front of the class and started talking about his weekend and all these things. And I raised my hand and I was like, hey, so we just read this really important book and maybe you could stop talking about your weekend and we could learn something and we could go over the book. And of course, that's not an appropriate way to speak to an authority figure. But I just didn't really I look back on that attitude. I know better now. That's so rude. But at that age, I just was like, I don't know. That's how I was a teenager.
Well, you know, we were talking about how a lot of your writing, like one of the things that I said to Heather earlier was that if you look at her Facebook page, and I've been following it and reading it for a few years, and you really do take the time to put yourself out there and talk about really difficult and personal topics, but in a thoughtful, I think, productive way, including, you know, your family and you know, politics, racism, sexism, and stuff like that. And I think that's probably kind of natural for you.
Yeah.
But I want to hear how you were brought up, because you have such a funny dichotomy about like being this, like on the surface, I think that people react to you as like a pretty blonde, nice,
delicate,
nice, nice. And you know, the way you present is, let's just say, feminine and nice, a nice person. But the way, and I don't think, I don't get a feeling of anger from you, but and I don't think you're angry, but I think that you have really strong opinions and you're really good at putting them out there in a direct way, in a direct and honest way.
Thank you. I've been hearing more from other people lately that they think I'm nice, or, oh, you're so nice. And I always find it shocking or weird or surprising. Like, you think I'm nice? That's so weird. Because I guess the world often hasn't told me that. Like, people who know me just on a surface level think that. And I know that in the important ways that life has tested me, I'm a person who's caring for others. But I mean, it's hard. It's a weird thing to say about yourself. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, we'll see. It's something you'd rather other people say.
Okay, well, here's a quote. Here's a quote, folks. So this is something that Heather wrote about Anthony Bourdain, or about suicide after he died. So about depression, solving it, aside from meds and therapy, the magic formula, productivity and creativity with a side of communication and getting out of your mind house. So see, that's the kind of stuff that I totally agree with. And I think that that's a nice thing to say. It's not a simple thing to say, but it's a nice thing to say.
Thanks.
Maybe it's a dark, slightly dark thing to say.
I guess my brand of nice is a different. It's I don't think of myself as a harmless flower that I think we associate with nice. I think I am proactive. If I can help someone in some way, I'll do it. And I feel that once I know what the right thing is to do, if I don't do it, I can't live with that. Mm-hmm. So there's that whole thing about justice and injustice being silent in the face of injustice as being wrong. And I can't accept that for myself. So I do speak up whenever I can. And it has made a difference. And hey, you know what? I figured out when I've gotten depressed that that productivity, creativity, and getting out of your mind or thoughts, and just, you know, productivity can be as simple as washing a dish, walking down the street and leaving your room. And it's very hard when you're depressed to even believe that that will work, but it does always work.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember in college taking Ingmar Bergman film class, and the first thing I did after the movies was over is go home and wash the dishes, which with my four male roommates, we had a ton of. So that I get it. I get it. But I wanted to find out how you got this way. So you grew up in, how did you grow up?
Okay, so I grew up in suburban New Jersey with a Dutch mother. From the Netherlands. She moved here. She met my dad on a... I'll try to not.
She was born... Does she speak with an accent?
Everyone else hears it, but I don't because I just hear mom. But yes, she's from Enschede, which is on the border of Germany, where Grolschbier comes from. Mm-hmm. And she met my dad was drafted in Nam and stationed in Germany, and he met her on a train from Germany to Holland. So they dated for a few months, and then he flew back with her to the U.S. She was psyched to get out of her little poor Dutch village. And I grew up in the suburbs. I mean, this is a whole other thing, but my grandmother and my uncle were paranoid schizophrenic, and my dad's
Your grandmother and your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So your grandmother and her kid.
Yeah, her oldest son, and it's a huge issue in my life, and it's hugely impactful on who I am and how my family is. That my dad was, his father was a genius, an actual genius.
How was it manifested?
Just, they used to test people's IQ more back in the day.
Right, but what did he do?
Yeah, well, he was a professor, like he went to Columbia at 16 and was a professor of, the longest place he taught was at RISD.
Wow.
And he was basically the professor of everything that wasn't art. So he would teach math and physics, and he wrote and composed music. He did all kinds of stuff.
Oh, wow. I bet he knew my old roommate, Dagmar Frinta. I'll have to find out. But
maybe.
So that's, you know, you guys know RISD, right? Don't you guys? You guys sitting in your basements there? It's a really good school. I don't know if you ever could get in there. I know I could. But anyway.
Oh, you never know. Don't you say
no,
that.
No, I don't want
limiting
to. Well,
beliefs.
It's, you know, the ship
if you
sale.
Wanted.
If I really
if you
wanted it.
My if niece just thought she wasn't getting into any college, and she got into everything she applied to with a scholarship. So, you know.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, okay. So long story short is that my dad had this dichotomy in how he was raised, where his father was a genius, his mother was schizophrenic. So his father had this amplified mind. His mother had this mind that was sort of taken from her. Schizophrenia hits when you're around your late 20s, early 30s. Mm-hmm. So you can live your whole life and have this full life and people love you and know you. And then boom.
So we're thinking that your grandmother and your grandfather were married and had kids and had a normal life. And then one day.
Yeah, one day she was gone.
Fell apart.
It is a long story and it's a painful story and it's an important story. Mm-hmm. It's a part of, like, when I say, like, how I was raised, my father is a guy who's really smart and really sweet and silly and charming and full of life. But he was essentially not raised because fatherhood wasn't valued in his father's generation. So fathers, like, there wasn't a sense of father your children, and mm-hmm. he's the only parent with his sanity. And so my dad was kind of just like a feral kid.
Was it just him and his brother?
Well, he had three brothers. There were four of them.
And one of them had schizophrenia?
The oldest one, yeah.
And then there were the three of...
And the oldest one was also a genius first. So it's a devastating loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a devastating loss.
No, it's horrible.
Like,
did you know the schizophrenic?
Well, it's a really long story.
Okay,
I could just say that he was...
Have you met him? That's all.
I met him 2 months ago for the first time after him being lost in the system, because he's technically, in a way, property of the system of Rhode Island, or the state of Rhode Island. He was committed to the state of Rhode Island, and we couldn't find him because of patient privacy. And I just didn't want to give up and was searching and searching. We finally found him two months ago after 40 years.
Wow.
40 years of being estranged.
Well, that could be a whole hour. Easy.
It's
easy.
A whole...
No problem.
But
we're here to talk about you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What about was your grandfather, was your father's father? He was obviously had to take care of a schizophrenic wife and a child. How did that work out? Or what was that like, do you think?
I don't know exactly, because... But both of my dad's parents died with us, actually. My grandpa lived with us when I was in fourth grade year when he had cancer. My mom's been a caregiver for a long time.
Wow.
I mean, really.
So you were around that as a kid.
Yeah, and I loved being around them. And then my grandma came to live with us from when I was a freshman in high school through my sophomore year of college. And she's so crazy in sometimes the most delightful way.
I bet.
I mean, she was such a colorful, I loved her a lot. We all did. I mean, sometimes incredibly deeply frustrating, of course. It's a whole
lot. So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
My sister, who's 7 years older. I have one sister.
And are you guys close?
Well, we have difficulty connecting, and it is the source of my greatest guilt. I feel a lot of guilt around it, and I am, as an adult, trying to still figure out how to be better so that I don't get so far. I mean, I just saw them all this week in New Jersey, and we got into a huge fight, and I don't know how to communicate with her, and I need to figure that out.
Mm. So do you have an idea of how that relationship went wrong or went into a direction that's not a positive one?
I mean, we're really, really different in every way, and we don't get each other. And I think my parents are two different, very extreme personalities. My mom has a really big personality too. Like, my mom was this working woman, and we talk about how I was raised and why I am the way I am. In the 80s, my mom was a builder. And that wasn't even
a builder.
Yes.
Wow.
She is this Dutch woman who's very smart, but in her generation, women didn't get to go to college unless they were wealthy or people would go to be a doctor or a lawyer, especially in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a teenager in like the 60s. And even though she's very smart, it's, you know, she married my dad and she was a part of the Boston University Wives Club while my dad pursued his degree, even though my dad later became this like mad scientist
and
inventor.
What did your dad do?
Well, he did. He worked in computers for a while, and then he was a scientist, and he was developing new methods of water filtration. And his science mind was so sharp, and he came up with all this stuff that's ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 90s, getting into trying to put out homeopathic medicine, which is hot right now. Really getting into windmill technology.
Does he have like patents and stuff like that, or involved with patents?
No, people would steal his stuff all the time.
But really at that level of work.
Yeah. And he just had a disorganized business mind, right. And he never really brought home the bacon, but he was a very supportive father, and I have a very close relationship with him. He's a stroke victim. He had a severe stroke 8 years ago, mm-hmm. is alive, but is, you know, his body's mostly paralyzed, mm-hmm. and he can only say yes and no and hi. Ah. So it's really depressing.
Really, really difficult.
But he's alive, and so my mom,
wow. She was a very strong tough place right now.
Yeah.
But it sounds like growing up, your mom was kind of a good businesswoman, right?
Oh, yeah.
What is a builder?
Okay. So as a builder, so there's different things. So as a builder, she was in the day, this is well before there was Martha Stewart or TV shows like that. She was into building beautiful homes. And so mm-hmm. she, as the builder, she was the head of site, and she would hire all like the great painter, a great landscaper. Mm-hmm. And she would actually, when I was little in preschool, I would visit the building sites and have so much fun running up and down those hills of dirt. And I loved it.
Entertaining the workers. I bet that would be fun having a little girl like you running around.
I absolutely loved it. And so I was raised with this. Okay. So, and then around 1990, the building market went south. And
wait, I want to ask you one question. Yeah. Sorry. So did she own the business or was she working for somebody?
It was her business.
So there's theoretically a lot of money in that, no? Or managing a lot of money.
My parents both grew up with they didn't grow up with anything. They were on their own. So there was no, like a lot of entrepreneurs of today really grew up with a little, I guess you call it a nut
or
a base. And they didn't really have that. But I will say this. The building market went bad around 1990. My mom was like, okay, I have to get out of this. We made ends meet for sure.
Yeah.
But then she, from then on, started working in New York City and worked her way up from secretary to executive in that time. My mom was a business executive by, you know, the late 90s. And she, with only a high school education.
Holy shit.
And she just worked her way up to being this really award-winning individual at this company at LexisNexis, which was a big deal at the time.
Yeah, I know.
She was an executive there. And
my husband will be very, very impressed.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, my mom is an impressive woman. And then my dad is a scientist, inventor. He's a huge influence on me. He never really, like, in the 80s, he had more of an office job, but he was always like this independent spirit. He never really, you know, brought home bacon in that way, but he had his business from the home.
So what I'm getting is that your mother, the role models you had is your mom was like a very, what's the word? I don't know, like a very, you know, a great example of what a woman, like kind of almost having it.
Could be.
Yeah, admire.
And I really, in no way, if some people say such bad things about working moms or, they weren't there, I never felt she wasn't there for me. She showed up. We had family dinner together every night, mm-hmm. even though she has a 2-hour commute from the city with traffic. And she was there for me. Like I had a mother and I had a father too. And I realized as I got older what a feminist my dad was, because the word feminist was really never uttered in my house. We just, we lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that I never heard my dad ever speak as though there was anything odd or undesirable about my mother's power and status.
Mm-hmm.
He never felt insecure that she made money. He never felt, we never heard words in our house that a woman couldn't do something. Instead, like, I still remember sitting in the car with my dad and him telling me, you know, I think I was like 13, and he's like, you could do anything you put your mind to. And I was like, no, dad, like, I can't be a gymnast. I'm not really good at that. And he's like, no, but if you tried, you could. And it was like, goofing around, but I will not forget those things I've always been such a confident motherfucker. I can say, this is called Dr. Lisa Levy gives a shit. So I can say, I was a confident little motherfucker. I was.
Sounds like it.
I was aware that other women didn't raise their hand, and I wanted to raise that hand, and I wanted to show.
So did you feel from an early age that you sort of wanted to stand up? You did. So were you clued in at an early age that girls weren't treated fairly? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I saw myself getting punished for things that boys were celebrated for. And the spirit of my soul that I like wanted to express was often being squashed. And I made a body switching comedy. The penis envy in me is so real.
Really? Why? Is it not because, is it because of the sexuality or because of the power?
It's because of the power that I just want to be appreciated for more than my packaging and my abilities are. I was raised in a household where women were viewed as being valued for so much more. And it wasn't until I was shocked that the outside world felt otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to say that earlier I got you to admit that you know you're pretty. I'm just telling this to my listeners because it's radio and they don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Heather is a really pretty blonde and all that stuff. And she, I got her to admit it. She knows it. And so the point I'm trying to make is that I wonder if you were being penalized because you were pretty, because people, I mean, I wonder if you had a different experience as a pretty girl than somebody else in your class who wasn't as pretty or something like that. I mean, what do you think? Do you think you were more aware of it because...
Yeah. Well, here's what I believe on that.
And you don't look like a troublemaker. That's... I mean, the way you look and what we're talking about are two different things.
Well, okay. On the one... The first off, you said to me, do you know you're pretty? And I said, how can I not? How can I not? The world makes a really big deal about it. They constantly tell you like it's the most important thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And people get really, I mean, as I do pay the bills doing sound for like movies and TV, and I push around really heavy equipment. And anytime I'm in public, everyone makes a big effing deal over what, oh, do you need help with that? Oh, they shouldn't make you push that. I'm like, how should they not? This is my, I am earning a living right now. Back the fuck off.
So you mean the other people on the set?
No, just if you're working in New York City and you're pushing
out on the street, in public, in front of people,
they make such a big
deal.
It's
like the opposite of catcalls.
And I'm like, well, yeah, do not touch my equipment. I am liable for it. Get your damn amateur hands off of my shit.
That's hilarious.
And so it drives me nuts. But so people make a really big deal out of your looks and you being that and. It has like no value. So it has some value, I guess, that as I, you know, when I'm 37 now and when I was 30, I was afraid I was losing my looks and I was single because the world is designed to make you feel bad about your looks. And you, even if you're pretty, you'll always doubt how pretty you are. Well, I'm pretty, but I'm this kind of pretty. And that you'll always, no matter who you are, not like something about your appearance and have it drag you down because our society is designed to make you hate your body and face.
Right.
But on the other hand, the feedback from public is so intense. And I believe that every single person's people, I've heard this thing about pretty privilege. And I know that that exists for certain things, but it depends what you want in the world.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the way you're processed by the population there. Like,
Well, the population will give you free drinks and try to fuck you.
So, and also maybe because you're confident, people are more willing to see you as pretty in a way, right away.
I mean, there's certain things it gets you, which I guess are kind of nice sometimes. It's not a bad thing. We all, I guess, it's ingrained in us to want it. I do know that I am in a certain packaging where the world wants me to be a certain way. But I mean, I wrote this thing when I was 16. I wrote a lot of poetry. I wrote a lot. And I had this little piece of paper I always kept that said, like, why, God, why would you give me a mind to think and a heart to feel if all you wanted to do was fuck me? And that's how
wrote that?
Yeah, when I was 16.
Genius.
Because...
Brilliant.
Well, when you're 16, everyone's trying to fuck you. Everyone. And that's all they want to do.
I want to ask you about your sister. So is she... Well, we don't have to talk about that. But anyway, I just wanted to know what her role is as a female is. Or how did she...
My sister.
And she's 7 years older
than
you.
She's 7 years older,
which is a lot, so.
She and I, you know, I idolized her when I was little, and then as we grew up, it's just that she's more of like a family, like marriage and kids, and at one point was more politically conservative and now has adapted her views in today's world, of course, which is good. And we just didn't see eye to eye on lifestyle or world or, and, you know, like she wanted to be in the suburbs. I'm more of a city person. So what we desire and enjoy mm-hmm. in life is just very different.
Is she, you sound like you're pretty in line with your parents. Is she in line with your parents the way you are?
There's things that she shares in common with them, but...
Is she more conservative than
she's
them?
She's more conservative and she's more cautious in things, but I she's a stay-at-home mother and my mom wasn't, so in that way they're different, but there's a lot of qualities that they share in common, you know, so mm-hmm. I have things that I get frustrated with and annoyed about my sister, but I respect her and value her, and I know that she just sees things differently, so I'm very hesitant to speak about her negatively in
sure.
a way publicly.
Yeah. No, good.
So even if like privately I'm like, oh, that annoys me,
yeah,
like
well,
I don't think that. It's like we like different things.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking anyway, is that your parents sound really perfect, sort of set up. For, not perfect in general, but I can see where yeah. you came from because yeah. you have a very strong mother who takes her power almost for granted. She's, you know, it sounds like she doesn't question whether she deserves it.
Mm.
And your father sounds like kind of a fun, really smart guy. And they're just a team, and doesn't sound like, you know, your mom's trying to have power because she makes more money. There's none of that going on.
There's not that. What is going on is they're two opposites in every way. My dad's Jewish. My mom's Christian. My mom's from Holland. My dad's from America. My mom's a perfectionist. My dad is so scatterbrained and like all like messy. And so I grew up in a home with a lot of loud arguing, and we're very expressive and we're very dramatic. But for all that loudness, for all the ridiculousness, we're also extremely loving. So every single member of my family, what we all share is we are loud and passionate and explosive, which, you know, isn't Brady Bunch perfect. And our Thanksgivings
yeah.
have been lonely. No, I'm not. Like my mom's family is huge and they're all in Holland. And my dad's family is sort of scattered. And we've grown closer recently, but, you know, it's a...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just yeah. picturing, I wonder if your sister was more different, like, than the rest of your family, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she embraced, I don't feel comfortable speaking for her, she's not
good.
Here, I gotta say,
there's almost everything
I want to talk about, but I don't, yeah. I'm afraid that if I talk about certain things that would come off as negative or judging her,
yeah,
and I don't want to do that.
We don't want to do that. It's interesting.
We're very different. Yeah, we're very different people. And that's what I can say about that.
So let's talk about, you said that you wanted that, can we talk about dating, marriage?
Oh, sure.
Marriage?
Oh,
you
were, sure.
I mean, I'm a big, you know, I didn't get married till I was 54. And I'm like, I think marriage is like, I think it does undermine women a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever been in a position or have you?
Yeah. I mean, recently my last boyfriend, I thought he was it. I thought that we were going to move to LA together. And he and I moved to LA the same month, but a few weeks apart for our own careers and our own lives brought us there. And I just thought, oh, this was the one.
How long had you been dating?
We dated for only a year, but we were like 35 and we thought we know each other better. We get along so well together and we were just going to move in together, you know. But we did talk about marriage and how we'd like to have a wedding and those things. And I thought about that stuff. And so I've had a lot of boyfriends. I've been in love a few times, which mm-hmm. is wonderful. And I've been single also for mm-hmm. a lot of my life, too. Mm-hmm. I had a boyfriend at 23 that I moved in or was about to move mm-hmm. in with that I thought I would marry. And I've been there a few times over and I'm so psyched and into being there again and again. I don't care. Like, I'll fall in love again. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, everyone wants the one they love to be it. And every time I've been in love, I wanted them desperately to be it. I had someone on and off relationship for 9 years. Mm-hmm. I've made certain choices. I believe that life works out how it does. And I've learned such valuable things from each person that mm-hmm. came into my life. And we got into talking about this other stuff for a totally different reason, which was that I had dated some famous people. And we were talking about it for a different reason. But I think about, oh, if I married at 23, I wouldn't have had these other wild experiences. And not that famous is like so amazing, but it is such a unique thing to experience.
Yeah.
And like having an open door into those worlds is very interesting and valuable experiences that I would have cut myself off from if I got married young. And I do think I'm totally open to marriage at some point.
Uh-huh. So you don't really have any particular hesitations about it?
I do. I've had them. Marriage has meant something different to me at different ages. I think that the marriage topic, I mean, I explored it a lot in my fears about it, my fears about going from like the hot, sexy girlfriend to the, we are a marriage, a wedding obsessed culture that's extremely negative on marriage. We put down, oh, my ball and chain, my wife. Ugh. We always talk so bad about spouses in the public discourse, like they're boring and not desirable anymore. And to become that, and when you're like, it's all about the wedding, it's all about the party. But our society sends out such pessimistic, negative messages.
I agree. That's why, that's why I didn't want to get married. There was
And that you're literally property, the whole name changing thing. I just hate the whole thing. I mean, I don't know if you changed your name or not.
No. But. Are you kidding? Well, I didn't want to get married. I mean, there's actually my friend Spencer made a film about it, but a documentary about us getting married. But the thing is that I felt that way also. In that I felt like, especially since I got married so late, that I had achieved all these things in my life, or I had done all this stuff and made all this stuff happen as a single person or mostly single person. And all of a sudden, like, getting married is the best, most important thing, biggest achievement ever. And I think marriage is really... You know,
well, anyone can do it, right? The whole institution is. And well, here's what I think.
Disrespectful to women. How's that?
The original design of it. Now, if today you're just talking about a healthy relationship between two people that want to be together, that's the ultimate. Here's what I think. I think there's a ranking of as far relationship status. The top of it is happy, satisfied relationship. The next rung is happy, satisfied singledom. The next one is unhappy singledom, and the bottom is unhappy marriage, because unhappy singledom is superior to unhappy, because then you're at least free and you're on your own and you're not stuck in a thing. And so I think a wonderful relationship is great, but I will not settle for anything. I'm not going to go through commitment and obligation and having to factor someone else into my life decisions unless I absolutely want them. And I won't settle out of insecurity. And a lot of people do. And a lot of people get divorced.
Yeah. So scary. And I consider that naive. I think, having a relationship is hard and a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I think people think it's going to be a lot easier. Just like having kids. Do you want to have children?
I do. And so turning 37 this June felt serious and scary, because I'm like,
you really know you want to have kids.
I do. Really do. But I accept if it doesn't happen. I'm not going to freeze my eggs, because I think it's a sexist fucked up. I'm using that F-bomb again. But
Say fuck.
It's a fucked up industry, like, that preys on women's fears and insecurities. And I hope that I can have a child naturally. I hope that. And if it doesn't happen for me, it may break my heart. But how old am I going to be when I have the baby? Like, if I'm so old that I'm not fertile anymore, like, how hard on my body would it be to have the baby? And how hard would it be? I mean, my dad was 38 when I was born. My mom's 31, and I have an older parent. My dad is ill, and it's hard also, too, on the kids to have a parent that's super old. So there comes a point where it's not going to happen. And I don't want to judge other people who are older as parents, because I may be 45 or however old and at least trying. I don't know. Maybe that's what my life will bring.
Well, it's totally an individual thing. It's however one person experiences doesn't necessarily mean anything to anybody else. We're all on our own path here on this one.
I really would like to bring up children. And if it doesn't happen for me biologically, I've always said that I'll do it if I get rich at some point or become successful financially or make like a career milestone, then I'll have them whether I have a partner or not. And ideally, I do have a partner, but I'll have them one way or the other. And by have them, I mean, if I can have a biological child, great. But if I have the money, I'll definitely adopt. I will without question adopt. I know that that's what I want to do. I think it's you can like actually save someone's life in a really meaningful way.
True. So, are you dating anybody now, or are you dating in general, or are you just really busy?
I'm busy. I don't enjoy dating. I enjoy being in love and I enjoy romance and sex and all those things, but I am so picky and I don't like her. Like, dating involves inviting, being in the position to have to either reject someone or have your heart hurt. So I don't want to bother unless it's someone who gives me that spark or it's like something special.
What about just an evening of entertainment?
I have friends for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not entertaining.
No,
to
it's you don't so
find
unpleasant.
Strangers entertaining.
Well, sure, but as friends, like I don't like the landscape of dating is so unpleasant. I don't like there's all these expectations and judgments, and I can experience the world freely and in so many ways just hanging out with friends and meeting new people that way.
That makes sense.
So like at the end of a date you're either being rejected or rejecting someone, and it's I'd rather not unless there's actually potential.
The way it's set up now.
Yeah.
So, L.A., let's talk about your move to L.A. I was saying earlier that I have a little bit of L.A. FOMO. I'm not sure yet, but so you moved to L.A. a year ago. And how is it? What's changed or what's different?
It is so interesting. I did not expect L.A. to be as big of a change as it is. It took me by surprise. Like, I didn't even factor in that I was going to be new somewhere when a part of my New York identity has been, I'm from here. I know this place. I can drive without a GPS. Like, that's always
that's
been
something.
Yeah, yeah. So I like know this town. I know New York, New Jersey, tri-state area. Like, I'm good. But in LA, I'm a clueless little wide-eyed little baby. I'm like, what's that? Where is that? What's go over there? Where's a good beach? Like, I know nothing. And even the drive across country, it dawned on me at that moment. Wow, I'm about to experience something new every day.
And
it's wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
that
wonderful.
Must be great. That must be great. Rebirth of sorts, right?
Absolutely. Like, I felt that even though New York constantly changes and always has something to offer you in an overwhelming way, I felt that in a way I had grown or expanded as much as I was going to. At that point, I mean, New York has everything for everyone, but as a filmmaker, I felt that I want to get serious about where I want to end up with my career. LA offers, LA for creatives, that's where creatives get hired, even if you film in New York.
In the entertainment business.
Yes.
Yeah.
And New York is great for indie film, but after shooting my own indie feature film, it is not tenable for me to do another indie that involves any of my own money. So I have to get
Sensible.
I have to get other people's money. Since my feature, I've only directed with other people's money. And I mean, I used to finance my own shorts in one way or another, you know. So from now on, it has to be other people's money. And I feel my wings are completely ready to spread into bigger budget territory as a director.
Yeah.
So that is what I want next.
But I would imagine there's some opportunities there. Mm-hmm. Some does it feel like it's easier for you to work out there and find what you need and opportunities and stuff like that?
I would almost never use the word easy. It's still
Well, you do want to be like a writer, director, or whatever.
I want to do what even like you have like a Brad Pitt or a George Clooney, and even they, with all their success and fame and notoriety, even they want to direct. So everyone wants to direct.
Yeah, we know.
Everyone. So I'm going after the thing that everyone wants to do. And we live in a world where people will get hired as a director with no knowledge of how to direct. They just think you just go there with your creativity without understanding it's a profoundly technical art. Mm. And I've taken the time to learn that. Mm-hmm. And I know what I'm doing. And I love it. It's the one thing in my life that satisfies my technical, logistical side with the creative side. And I do feel my voice is missing from the general voices that are out there. You know, we have women's voices, but we don't have a lot of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely need more women who are, like, not going to take any shit out there, just out there in the world. So But is there a feeling of like you're around like the business and the people where you're part of that?
Yes.
Is there more of that kind of feeling?
That kind of activity is there. It's a place where New York, the people ask you what you do, but you're surrounded by people who are in your similar situation, which could be bad to think like there's not enough for all of us. Or it could be good and positive if you think, well, if this is happening for this person, I'm so close to it. Mm-hmm. It can happen for me. And there's just that kind of constant activity. And I feel being in New York as long as I was, there were people from the time when I was a comedian that are now like on billboards and have their own TV shows and movies. Sure. And I feel that if I was in LA when this was happening with them, perhaps I would have come up with them and they would have hired me to direct an episode. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt that I was out of their immediate thinking of like, oh, Heather would be great for this, because mm-hmm. I was removed from that world.
Right.
And I do hope that all those people, the light bulb goes off in their brain sometime soon where they say, Heather would be great for this.
Well, you know, a year is not very, very long. And, you know, your work is great. I mean, so you hear that, guys? But you have worked with some pretty big names like Hannibal and Christian Finnegan and Amy Schumer, right?
Not Amy Schumer, but...
Weren't you on I Feel Pretty?
Oh, I did sound. I mean, it's different. Like, you're not looked at as a creative. I've held a microphone over my peers as they thrive in the way I want to thrive. Ooh. And I hate
that. Is that hard?
I almost never want to work on comedies because there'll be people who are my exact age or were doing stand-up when I was doing stand-up and they have their own TV show now and we all know each other. And I honestly feel like a tool holding a microphone over them. Like, I know,
imagine.
Like, with sound, I could be at the top of my game. Like, I've been, I boom operator. I'm a sound utility or second boom on movies and TV shows. And I'm not the mixer because you have to invest so much money in a kit. Like, I mixed features and indie stuff. And then once I joined the union, you'd have to spend $100,000 or so on a kit. And it's not my end game. So in a way, like, I'm in a place where if sound was what I cared about, I could be at the top of that game.
Yeah.
But it's not my passion.
No, but someone else's. It's a really good job. And you're in the union. You've got amazing health care, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's
I do.
I
take care of my stuff. I don't expect people to provide for me. When I was a stand-up, I was a business lady. I was the director of like content strategy at a media company. And then when the 2008 crash hit, I lost my job. And then I went to NYU grad film.
Mm-hmm.
And then I focused, but I wouldn't have gone to film school and gotten myself into student loan debt if it wasn't for the economy.
Sure.
So
we only have a few minutes left. So women in L.A., I mean, I've been to visit L.A. I haven't like hung out there for a long time in recent years. So how are women treated in L.A. different than New York? I mean, in the old days, it wasn't, there were problems.
Yeah, yeah. The problems are, it's so weird. I landed in L.A. in the end of September and in October, Me Too happened. And it was so amazing. I mean, I just felt that was a beautiful, miraculous gift that suddenly the world cares about female directors. Like, what a weird thing that the world cares that I do what I do. Doesn't make it easy. People imagine there's all these opportunities for female directors. There's opportunities for people who have already directed episodes or have like bigger accolades. But for someone to get an episode of TV or a bigger budget for the first time, that's still super hard to cross over. Not impossible. And I'm banking on getting there. I'm counting on it. Yeah, that's what I'm going for. But so my point is that it's this weird transformational period. I'm so grateful that people care. LA, I've noticed on set LA film crews, there's a decent amount more sexism. Mm. However, there was I'm working on a TV show right now that at the beginning they had a sexual harassment like talk in a way that they never did before. Mm-hmm. And it has impacted behavior on set now that people have it in their mind that they have to watch what they say. And I'm so glad they have to watch what they say.
That is really good to hear.
Yeah.
I do. You know, it is really funny because I've been on this planet a long time and I have long felt disappointed about the women's movement. I mean, I felt like when I was, you know, a teenager, things were looking up more than they are now. Mm. I think we've gone backwards with all this bullshit, like plastic surgery and all this other crap. But the Me Too movement, for some reason, seems to have really changed things. And I will say this is the first time since the 60s, 70s that I've seen any real change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's big. I mean, I just remember there being marches on Washington for civil rights when I was in college, and me thinking to myself, like, why won't women do this? Why won't they stand up for themselves? Why won't we have a women's march on Washington? And I had that exact thought in college in like 02 or some whatever year it was. And the fact is, like, I was so sad that it just seemed like it was never going to happen. And it's been happening now every year, and every January there's a women's march.
It's great. It's great. Yeah. I think I keep thinking about what you said about your dad, like giving you a lot, giving you confidence. And I really think that that's the kind of stuff that really makes a difference with girls, getting a lot of confidence, getting confidence from their dads. You know, it really starts, I think it starts really young.
Yeah. I mean, it was my dad and my mom. My mom was a very like, take no shit, be amazing. Don't bother doing something if you're not going to give it your best and do it right. So it's really both of them.
Oh, yeah.
I am so thankful for how they raised me. And there's so many things that aren't perfect and difficult about it. But man, they did give me confidence.
I think also mothers are a lot more likely to give their daughters confidence. I just think that to really have it internalized around when you're around men, I think it's really good to have a dad, a male figure, or the dudes in there going, yeah, you got that.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've got 3 minutes left. So tell us again about where to find the movie.
Sure. Well, heatherfink.com is my website, and that's Fink as in F as in fuzzy, I-N-K. Because some like people think Fink. It's, yes, exactly, like Rat Fink. Some people think it's like Sink, and I hate that because that's not a name. Sorry to whoever is like Mr. or Mrs. Sink out there, but Heather Fink. And the movie Inside You is on Amazon and iTunes. I have a new feature, The Healing Powers of Palo Alto, that I'm developing right now. Ooh. It's a comedy about it's a witch. It's a modern day, kind of like inspired by The Craft, but it's a group of women in their 30s in the East LA wellness scene.
Oh, wow.
So it's set there, and it's actually about cultural appropriation and identity, which is rampant. Cultural appropriation is rampant in the wellness scene, and I think it's both funny and interesting to explore. So I'm exploring that with that movie.
Oh, that sounds funny. Doing research on that?
Yeah.
That must be hilarious.
It's been fun. And the truth is, like, as much as I may make jokes about it, I really love all that yuppie crap, like the sound baths and crystals.
You
and,
do? You just enjoy it? Are you a little cynical about it? Or?
I'm a little cynical, but there's certain things I really get something from, and meditation is one of them.
Fucking a sound bath. I
want
one.
Sound
bath? That's great. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. And if you're in New York, Mindful, MNDFL is the best guided meditation I've done. I started doing it. Well, when I had this bad breakup last year, I was like, I'm going to wellness the fuck out of this. And so I was just like, acupuncture, sound baths, meditation. I started going to Mindful. I really benefited from that.
There you go. I'm going to see if I can get some sponsorship cash out of them now.
Hey.
Thank you. So I just want to, anyway, Heather, thanks a lot. This has been really fun. So, and now I have to go to LA and get a sound bath. Oh, I guess I should get it here first.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to remind you guys that you're listening to Dr. Lisa on Radio Free Brooklyn. Please go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/ South by Southwest, that's SWSX, and vote for us. And you should really stick around after this because we have the best show. It's called Lost and Rewound, and it's with my good friend Ilan Danziger, and he plays music, and he's got some great talk, and he's just the most funny, charming guy. I'm a little jealous because he gets invited on a lot of shows. He gets a lot invited on our. I have to find out what his secret is, but we all enjoy it. So stick around, and thanks again for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit every Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m. Okie doke.